Hello and welcome to another edition of Guth and Hupke on Politics. I'm Amy Guth. That there's Rex Hupke. Rex, I would like to open by talking about something not political, and that is that a stranger stopped me on the sidewalk out this morning because I was filling in for a weekday host, and she said I was kind of paused waiting for some people to walk by, and this woman was kind of standing there, and she said to me, "You look like a young Ann Davis." And I was like, Ann B. Davis, who was on The Brady Bunch?
Oh, that day. Oh, wow.
And she was like, yeah, you must get that all the time. And I was like, I don't. I do not at all. So my question to you to open the show is, do I look like a young Ann B. Davis?
No. And I don't know where. I mean, I would just never even go, like, That's not a name that would ever surface.
No. People tell me I look like a lot of people that don't look like each other.
Uh-huh.
So I think I have like a mood ring face that changes based on what's happening.
You're like a Zelig kind of like.
Right. But I've never gotten Ann B. Davis.
That's weird. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's what's happening today for me.
That's an interesting way to start Wednesday.
Yeah. So that's what kicked that off. Anyway, lots of things going on in the world today. But Hupke, I want to talk about your column. There is a really, you've taken to Twitter, as you do, with your things that you write and things you're thinking about. But in particular, this is about immigration policy. And it's focusing on two people in particular, taking a bigger look at immigration that is really quite a gut-wrenching little tale. And I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about your column.
Sure. There's a woman and her daughter from the Democratic Republic of Congo, formerly Zaire in Africa, who fled and arrived in America in a port of entry near San Diego on November 1st. They immediately went to border agents there and said the mother it was difficult, I guess. Apparently she knew a little Spanish somehow, and that was how they communicated because her language nobody spoke there. But she communicated that she was seeking asylum. And so they took her and they put her through there's an initial asylum screening that everybody goes through, and she passed that, which indicates that you have a very strong case for gaining asylum. So her and her daughter were put up for a few days in what they described as sort of almost like a motel, but it was a federal housing facility of some sort. And then on November 5th, they separated the two and put the mother in handcuffs, took her to an ICE detention facility in San Diego, and took the child, who was screaming for her mother.
And how old is the kid?
7.
Okay.
They took the little girl to Chicago. She's here in a refugee relocation program
and
facility.
Why Chicago? Why?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. It's baffling. And the ACLU, which has now filed a lawsuit on behalf of the mother and child to try to reunite them, not to gain asylum for them, simply to get them back together. That's the, you know, they're that's the key thing right now. That was November 5th when this happened. They have spoke for 4 days. There was no contact between mother and daughter, so neither knew what was happening.
Did she know where daughter was?
No.
What a horrifying feeling.
Exactly.
And you have just been handcuffed, taken away, and you don't know where your kid is.
And
I cannot imagine how terrifying that would be.
And apparently from a small village in the Republic of Congo, and now in America, hardly anybody speaks the language, and your child has been taken away screaming for you. And not to mention your child, you know, who God knows what she's going through. She's being taken to the middle of the country.
Mm-hmm.
2,000 miles away from where her mother is.
Look, that'd be scary even if the kid was taken across town.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be scary and traumatic, much less having to travel all that way, not sharing a language with, I'm sure, the people taking you there.
Right.
That would be horrifying.
And so it's been 4 months now. They have spoken 6 times by phone with no video link up. The ACLU lawsuit describes the child obviously as distraught, crying every time they talk. She thinks her mom's in prison. She doesn't understand what's happening.
Because she's 7, how could she?
Sure, exactly. The mother, and also the little girl's birthday was December, so she spent her birthday alone in a facility in Chicago disconnected from her mother and unsure about anything that's actually going on.
I'm legit going to cry over that.
I know. And look, I have no reason to think that the child is being poorly cared for or whatever, but the bottom line is that the child should be with her mother. There's absolutely no reason. There's no accusation of mistreatment. There's no explanation of why this happened. The mother followed all of the proper steps for an asylum seeker. She didn't try to...
Is the mom in custody now, or is she in this federal housing facility, or both?
She's technically in custody,
yeah,
I guess. But, I mean, they're, you know, so technically the asylum case will proceed,
yeah,
but they've separated them, and they don't... And so the reason, according to the ACLU, and this jibes with things that were said last year by the Department of Homeland Security, is... You know, their thinking is that if they separate children from their families, this will deter people from trying to come here. Now, when it was first talked about...
Under asylum in particular, or just generally?
Yeah, no, see, that's what's weird about this. Is when it was first talked about, and this was by John Kelly, who's now the chief of staff, mm-hmm. Trump's chief of staff, but was head of the Secretary of Homeland Security. Back in March, he talked about this, and the way they spun it and tried to explain it was that they were talking about people crossing the border from Mexico into America, bringing their kids with them. They felt that if they separated the families, that would act as a deterrent, because right. That's a very dangerous journey that a lot of those parents take their kids on. Now, that's ridiculous in a lot of different ways, because frankly, in most cases, where they are in Mexico is also very dangerous. So, you know, you're kind of, mm-hmm. It's sort of a, what danger do you...
And what are you going to do, leave your kids behind?
Right, pick your poison. I mean, right, exactly. I mean, people who are in some cases fleeing for their lives, I don't know that that's necessarily...
This is embarrassing.
But
this
but
all embarrassing.
Right, the bottom line is, look, if you want to be draconian about immigration, that's one thing. I don't agree with that. But if that's the approach that this administration mm-hmm. wants to take, that's one thing. But this country... does not do this. I mean, you're separating, and frankly, I don't care if the mother did do something wrong, or if she didn't follow the right steps for asylum, you still shouldn't be separating a 7-year-old child from its mother unless there is a compelling reason, like the mother's abusing the child or something. But in this case, again, no right. accusations of anything.
She's, and even then, if the child entered a foster system mm-hmm. because of mistreatment or neglect, that would probably be the foster system in the county in which the mother lived.
Exactly. So it's just absolutely... when I heard about it, I just felt sick. And you know, I talked to the ACLU. I got a copy of the lawsuit. And of course, I reached down to the Department of Homeland Security.
Did they hang up on you?
No, but they... close enough. So I asked... You know, I said, I'm writing about this case, and I would like to talk to you all about it. And I got a response that said, as a matter of policy, we do not discuss pending litigation. Okay, so I responded, and I said, okay... can you please answer this more general question?
Right.
How do you normally handle asylum seekers who have children?
Totally fair question.
In a case where the parent is not being prosecuted.
Right.
No response.
Okay.
So I emailed again. I said, okay, I'm going to give this one more try. Here's an even more general question. Can someone there please talk to me about your policy for dealing with asylum seekers who have children?
Mm-hmm.
No response. So, you know, that's in the column, of course. Like, yeah. Okay, great. So you guys won't answer my damn questions. My country has now taken a 7-year-old girl from her mother and pulled her 2,000 miles away to the middle of the country for no apparent reason other than to try to keep other people from, in this case, seeking asylum, which,
like,
frankly...
You're screwing with someone's well-being and mental health and traumatizing them. That I'm sure that's going to be traumatic for her whole life.
Of course, yeah.
And to make an example out of her, like, that's
right.
That's real fucked up.
And even, you know, look, again, and you, to me this is cruel under any circumstances, but look, if this was maybe, say, they snuck into the country and were trying to get around the system or something, okay, still, I think this is insane and wrong and horrible. But in this case, this is a person not trying to, like, sneak in as an immigrant. But
she
trying
walked
to see,
in
she's
and went
seeking,
directly to...
Right, to the border
agents. Security,
and
yeah.
She's seeking asylum. I mean, seeking asylum is different.
It's very different.
Yeah, I mean, her life, according to the lawsuit, again, she was going to be killed if she stayed
yeah.
there. And that's why she fled. She got into
so
a
So why would we want to what is the point of trying to dissuade asylum seekers?
Right, exactly. That's
to I mean, the screening, I know somebody who was granted asylum.
Uh-huh.
And I've known her for decades, and that screening process is quite rigorous.
Sure.
It is very rigorous. It is, it's like not a simple check a box and you go and then you just sort of, you're in the wind. It's not that like that at all.
Yeah.
It was rigorous. It was emotional. It was difficult. And it really ultimately came down to, in her country of origin, her life was in great danger. It was, you know, due to her ethnicity, like suddenly right. that it became very dangerous. And she was a very young woman at the time. And she got asylum. And it was a lengthy process. And it took a lot of mental energy to get. It's not, I don't know why in the world anyone would be in favor of not granting someone asylum who legitimately qualified for it. I mean, we saw this right before World War II, when a lot of Jewish immigrants were being turned away.
Yeah, exactly.
And we saw how that went. Right. And none of them are around to tell us how that went.
I mean, who the hell are we if we aren't willing to take someone like that and help them? I mean, we're the wealthiest country in the world. I mean,
yeah.
Like, how can we not... How can you do this? And I don't get it. And the fact that it's being... This wasn't a mistake. You know, this is being done.
Well, I was going to say, this is happening. It's
right.
She's not
and
the only one.
And you're right. The ACLU also told me that there are reports of this happening in hundreds of other cases. So this is an so basically, when John Kelly's talked about this last year, there was considerable outrage, rightfully. And so it never became an official policy. But obviously, they're doing it. And
right. I wish they would have answered you, because I would just love to know any sort of reasoning. I mean, we're just left to speculate here.
Sure.
Is it that all children have to go through a major processing hub in Chicago? Okay, that's stupid, but at least there's a reason. This seems arbitrary and just for the sake of cruelty.
Exactly. It's baffling and it's sickening. And I mean, because, you know, you think about these things and you're like, okay, you know, this is, we're Americans, all right? This, whether we have anything to do with it or not, this is being done in our name, you know? And I just, it makes me absolutely sick. And I'm sorry, I'm unusually, like, really rattled and just upset by this, because I've been kind of processing it for the past couple of days. But, I mean, I don't understand who can do something like this. How can this be done in this country? And look, there's been mistakes made before. I'm not saying that past administrations haven't completely screwed over immigrants in various different ways and bad things have happened. But again, this is with intent, right? I mean, the intention here is to make an example of a fucking 7-year-old.
Right.
You know, a 7-year-old child who is sitting, you know, somewhere around here. You know, scared witless.
Somewhere in our city.
Right. And unable to communicate, you know, with people.
Spent her birthday alone. That's
anyway.
Terrible.
Yeah. So, but again, and this is something where, look, people need to, and I, you know, I always put my columns and stuff out on social media and whatever. But I mean, in this case, this isn't for me, but I, you know, the only answer here that I see is just public outrage and shame. Not that I think this administration has any shame at this point, but so, you know, this is something that people need to contact lawmakers. I saw actually Senator Durbin retweeted it, which made me happy. So at least that is getting some kind of mm-hmm. acknowledgement somewhere. But I mean, people need to put pressure, because we can't let this happen.
Yeah.
Not just to this kid, but to other. I mean, you know, who knows? We don't
the
know.
Hundreds of others,
right.
least hundreds. I'm sure it's in the thousands, really.
So it's really, so please write a letter, email, call, do something, because, you know, this is just... I mean, we talk a lot about the big, broad issues and a lot of the crap that's going on right now. And I think all of it is stuff to be concerned about. And you know, we talk about the importance of getting out to vote and everything and stuff. But, I mean, this is something that you talk about, something that'll creep along and build and just become awful. I mean, this is something that needs to be nipped in the bud, like yesterday.
I mean, and I always think of lasting impact on things. And I think about this little girl. Imagine being 7, like, think back to when you were 7 years old and you are I can't even fathom what that would suddenly be like. You've just gone through this harrowing ordeal to leave your home
right.
because it was very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And travel a very long way, and then there's some official looking people that look like, you know, have some uniforms, and that's intimidating, I think, to a lot of children.
Of course, yeah.
And then it seems like it's going to be okay, and then suddenly there's this scene and you're dragged away. Like, that's going to mess with that girl her whole life. That's never going to leave her, right? Like, no amount of therapy is going to undo that. That's going to shape her profoundly, I'm sure.
Right.
And I hope there is a great deal of therapy in her life in the future. She's going to need it. Everybody needs it, to be fair. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's a profound trauma.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of all of these kids that have experienced something like this. And it's infuriating. And so we also talk a lot about unproductive outrage. And I think this is a time when, in fact, it can be quite productive outrage.
Yeah.
Because making a lot of noise to our representatives in a way that is unrelenting, mm-hmm. that is like, I can wait you out. I can write you this email
right.
and send you a fax or whatever the hell thing mm-hmm. every day.
Yeah.
I will wear you down. There's a great app, we've talked about it before, but if you've not used it, it's called ResistBot. It makes it so easy to do this. You can send a text message from your phone, and it makes these very beautiful letters, and you can fax them or mail them mm-hmm. or both. It'll just do it for you, all from just you texting on your phone. It fills in all the stuff.
Yeah.
Even if you don't even know who your representatives are, it figures it out for you. You're just like, what's my zip code? Here you go. Great. You're going to contact these two people, and it'll even stop you from doing something dumb. Like, if you are going to raise an issue with someone who already supports it, it'll mm-hmm. kind of let you know things you can kind of say, thank you for your continued support on this issue. I do not support it. Please continue to, you know.
Yeah. That's great. I'm going to actually, because people have been asking on Twitter somewhat, what can we do? I'm going to send out a link to that. That's a great idea.
Yeah, ResistBot. That way you can just let your representatives know this is unconscionable, and you should, I mean, I think with this issue, why not blanket all your lawmakers, at every level, all the way down ballot, because everybody should be involved in that, because that's so gutting, and it's so terrible to think about that. And there's so much terrible shit happening right now.
Honestly, one of the, and I'm going to try to say this without losing my mind here, but the kid.
Do we know her name? What is her name?
No, we don't know her name. They just identify her as SS.
Okay.
And Miss L is the mother. The sensitivity of this is apparently considerable, because they were very limited in the information they can give, because they said that her case is something that would be recognizable to people back there. But the kid, when she's worried about her mom.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, when she she wants to know that her mom is okay. She's worried that her mom isn't sleeping. And she's seven. Anyway.
And we're both going to cry now.
Yeah. I just can't.
That's what's going to happen.
Fucking horrible.
Well, and that's really kind of a classic behavior of kids that have been through something like that.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, if you rely on a person to give you care, it's common for the kid to then worry about them and care for them. I don't talk about this a ton, but a little bit of the disaster response stuff that I have done for hurricanes, that's a thing that we see a lot. Like, a lot of times, like, Disney or somebody will give us stuffed animals to give out, and the kids will, they're either very fixated on their parents' well-being and, like, going and getting them tissues and water and wanting to do things for them, mm-hmm. or they'll, like, take the stuffed animal and reassure it and be the caretaker kid themselves needs, which is really hard to see, because, you know, you should just be allowed to be a kid and not have to worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't seem stuff.
And, you know, think about just one last thing on that. But think about this child. Think about the difference that this could have been. And think about 100, 200, whatever, however many others. You know, you take them in, you protect them, you give them a chance at a life.
Mm-hmm.
And think of how that child is going to reward this country, and how this child is going to feel about this country and view it and stuff. And, you know, as opposed to now, you know, it's like, good Lord. I mean, hopefully it works out still, but you aren't going to take away this.
You're not going to undo this horrible.
This isn't a bell that gets unrung, man. I mean, it's
right. This is profoundly going to shape that little girl and countless others, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's, speaking of young people, a great deal of activism continues to happen from high school students.
Yeah, I love them.
They're so good. And they're the perfect. It's the perfect storm of things, right? Because they're at the age where they're kind of a little more invincible to a lot of trolling efforts. Mm-hmm. At the very least, like, they feel it, but they can dish it back out really well.
Mercilessly.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
It's so great.
Some of the owns happening on Twitter are so good.
It is so damn funny because you're right. They're uniquely equipped to handle this.
They really are.
Right.
Because they're able to do it without showing any emotion or just going like, just kind of throwing it back really fast.
Yeah.
And it's so lovely and so funny. It's troubling, though, to see people in positions of power being so shitty about young people.
Yeah, and it's just, and as soon as that turn happened, you know, the moment that all of a sudden somebody had the balls to start criticizing these kids and coming after them a little
bit. And talking about, like, their manners and they need to know their place, I was like, the hell are you doing?
As soon as that happened, you knew it was going to get worse, and now it is. And now, like, Rubio today sent out some shit tweet about, like, you know, it sounded, I mean, honestly, and, you know, it's fun. With Rubio, I'm kind of like, look, dude, you're not old enough to be grumpy old man.
Yeah, but he really is. He was, like, born an old guy.
Yeah.
I know, that's totally true.
We used to have some decency in this country. And I'm like, you know what? You spent a damn 8 years trying to tell us that Barack Obama was destroying America. So don't talk to me about, you know, having some manners here or whatever. The Republicans have lost, especially by just simply by standing by Trump, they have lost all credibility on the decency front, you know? I mean, how dare you criticize these kids?
Right. Here was one of his tweets today. The debate after Parkland reminds us we the people don't really like each other very much. We smear those who refuse to agree with us. We claim a, he says, Judeo-Christian heritage, but celebrate arrogance and boasting. And worse of all, we have infected the next generation with the same disease.
And then, like, the best thing, it wasn't from one of the the Parkland students are too good, I believe, to do this, but I saw somebody retweeted it with "eat a dick," and there were like 500 other iterations of that. But basically, everybody's like,
"Oh my god!" I mean, nonetheless, these children are prevailing.
Oh,
they're
god,
doing remarkably good work.
Yes, they are,
and I wish I could support them even more. But it's, you know, it's a good, I think it's a good lesson for a lot of people that it's not about, like, get young people involved. It's get the hell out of the way and let people lead.
Yeah,
and not allow people. That's not even the word either, because that still sounds like supremacy. But you know what I'm saying? Like, make it so that he or she is, whoever is moved to lead, may do so.
Right.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
That it's not like, I will tell you what social movements are happening. It's like, nope, here's who stepped up and here's who we're going to
just let them run
support.
With it.
Like, support that person who has stepped up right now.
Yeah.
And they have stepped up remarkably and wonderfully, and I'm delighted by their everything.
Yeah. And it's just so funny because there's all these, like, crusty,
oh, God,
conservatives that are trying to,
like, that are really focused on, like, you young people and your manners.
One of them, who, it was somebody,
but
from
same guy though, like the same people that are, like, bitching at them about manners will, like, say, like, you ugly feminists couldn't get laid anyway.
It's exactly, like, exactly.
That's just, like, I tweeted something about Google miscategorizing those, like, fake abortion centers that are actually, like,
oh right,
counseling centers.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I tweeted a story about that, and some guy went after me about that, about, like, you know, you feminists are too ugly to fuck anyway. Like, no one's going to impregnate you. I was like, when's our first day?
Yes.
You seem nice.
I'm going to swipe whatever direction it is.
I'm going to swipe whatever direction on you. Right. So I looked through, like, who is this lunatic? And I looked through his tweets, and he was, like, bitching about the Parkland students not having any manners. And I'm like, okay, you just told a total stranger that for tweeting a story, she was too hideous to have sex with. So, all right.
I kind of feel like there's something about the way they're handling this that has kind of inspired me. I feel like, in terms of just, I've felt a lot looser lately about shitty replies and stuff like that, and mean emails and stuff. Because, you know, I mean, they really are. They're just literally just brushing it off their shoulder and moving on. I mean, they don't. And sometimes they'll respond, but they do it in a funny way. And, you know, it's just really it's fascinating.
It's a great way, because there's really nothing you can do back.
Yeah. And I think it's and that's what I think is the root of the problem, is that it's driving, because a lot of us, like, I think, you know, the older liberal adult people tend to fight back a little bit more, or get ornery about it, and be like, "All right, fuck you," and whatever. But you know, I feel like these conservative troll people are kind of like, "Hey, wait a minute! All our magic tricks aren't working on these." What kind of witchcraft is this?
It's especially funny against like when it's an instance of mansplaining, mm-hmm. like it's an old conservative dude and it's a young, like a teenage girl,
right.
like those
yeah.
are the funniest because yeah. they just like, nope.
Yep.
It doesn't even like, bing, like yeah. she just flicks his tweet across the room like
yeah,
a booger.
Exactly.
Like, we're done here. Like, like, I don't need this.
That is a perfect way to describe it. Exactly.
It's real funny to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I wish I could remember what it was. One, was it the Federalist or something? Like some like super conservative publication. Some guy, you know, tweeted out like his story, which was basically like, because the Parkland students have chosen to put themselves into this conversation and are saying things that I disagree with, I must respond, and I should not be blah blah blah. It's like, oh God, shut up.
Like, reel it in, Captain Hot
yeah,
Takes.
Yeah, really. I mean, but yeah, exactly. I'm like, he's sort of like trying to justify, you know, he was trying to justify his disagreement with them.
Right, right.
And his sort of like snobbish, you know, criticism of mm-hmm. what they're doing.
And what's interesting really about the replies is that the replies to the conservative condemnation of these kids from the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily rude. It's kind of beautiful because it's not necessarily like mean or shitty. It's actually just an outright dismissal.
Yeah.
I am too busy for your shit.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
such a funny and light and breezy way, like the nope, pass. It's so good.
Yeah. No,
it's a joy to watch.
It is. And I feel like it's just, I mean, it's just such an interesting, I hate to call it a development given the tragedy that sparked this, but I mean, it really is. I mean, this is we've moved into a different phase of this conversation now, and it's all
yeah.
because people who are unbeknownst really to us grown-ups, the people who were most perhaps qualified to take on the seemingly like immovable force, immovable object rather, in the NRA, were these kids. I mean, mm-hmm. and they really, and look what's happening. I mean, look at all the corporate stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
Look at dicks.
I was going to say, can we talk about the boycott dicks hashtag?
let's talk dicks.
Oh, okay. So a lot of companies have said, like some airlines have said, you know, we had discounts for NRA members. We're not doing that anymore. There was a bank or two that said, you know, we're no longer carrying an NRA
credit card.
Like, logo emblazoned credit card,
right.
which like, oh yeah. my God, I'd be horrified if I
yeah,
saw that
really,
anyway.
Like, this is my small penis credit card.
No kidding, right? For real. You know, like all the, there's been movement. Exactly. Like it's working
yeah.
and there's been movement. So Dick's Sporting Goods announced that they were not going to be carrying that assault rifle. And a lot of people flipped out and started the hashtag boycott dicks.
Yeah.
Which is becoming, I think you said on Twitter, like this perfect cell phone.
Yeah. It's like, boycott dicks.
Right. Which immediately like, right, I thought of.
You are boycotted, sir.
Fine. Right. Immediately, I one time returned a pair of running shoes to a Dick's Sporting Goods, and I turned into a 12-year-old because this poor kid behind the counter at the customer service area, he kept saying dicks. Over and over and over. And I got the giggles and could not stop laughing. Because he was like, so would you like to have in-store Dick's merchandise? I just kept laughing at him. And I couldn't stop. And it was, I mean, I was kind of like hangry, to be fair. And so I just, like, my blood sugar was low. But I couldn't stop. And then at the end, he said, like, anyway, do you want to join the Dick's Club? And I just, like,
you're like, stop it.
But yeah, the boycott dicks hashtag is a real joy because, I mean,
oh, that's fantastic.
Does that chain exist outside of the Midwest? Is it everywhere?
You know, I think so. I mean, I think I've seen that in, although I want to say I've seen it in Florida.
Okay. So, I thought yeah, maybe
I
it was only
Midwest. I may be wrong, but I mean, offhand, I think there are dicks everywhere. I see.
We didn't even set it up, but man, you took that one.
I see good. Dicks everywhere. I just...
There are dicks in practically every strip mall yeah. and every suburban location.
can't throw a rock without hitting a dick, sir.
This is the show that gets us fired, Hupke. This is the one.
This is the catharsis from the more serious opening segment.
Ooh, lordy.
But the thing that they did, though, that I didn't... I just saw this shortly before we went on here, but which I didn't realize at first. I knew that they were not going to sell the assault rifles anymore, but they actually put out this like a very detailed statement saying that they themselves are raising the age to purchase any kind of firearm to 21, and here are the things that we think lawmakers should do. And it's like your basic laundry list of what pretty much people have been talking about for ages in terms of sensible gun reform, which is just like, you know, universal background checks. I forget what the, but no, like high capacity magazines and, you know, just a bumps, no bump
the
stocks.
Bump stock, yeah.
So yeah, well, that's great. I mean, it's great that they not only, I mean, it took it beyond just like a, you know, a quick hit little, okay, we're not going to sell those guns to like, okay, we're not going to sell those guns and we endorse this logical plan.
Yeah, which is, it's a bold move because a lot of companies will respond that way because they realize like dollars are on the line.
Yeah.
You know, like they'll go, people are going to boycott us if we don't fix this thing people are pissed off about right now.
Yeah.
And sometimes it has to be a really controversial, like very polarizing topic like this. Mm-hmm. But then that it's that next step where they're like, you know what? I'm not worried about revenue. I'm worried about human beings. And that's always my gripe is anytime there's human or anytime there's revenue and dollars put over human beings, which is almost daily and constantly. And they, you know, they took that another step, which I think is really interesting. Now let us pivot as we were talking about this topic, to the idea of putting, of arming teachers and how that, idea doesn't look so hot today, does it?
No.
So
it is like this is one of those times too where just I can't believe that this is something that's actually
none of it seems real. We said this last week. Like I look at Twitter every morning and I go the first thing I say out loud every single day, I look at Twitter and I go, Jesus Christ. Yes. And I set down my phone and then I get up and I make coffee. Every day. The first thing out of my mouth is Jesus Christ.
Holy hell. Because this is, we're actually having, this is a conversation, and not only a conversation, but apparently several states are already, red states are already working on legislation to arm I'm like, what are you talking about? But today, and as, you know, you talk about it, you talk about a higher power perhaps doing something to send us a message, maybe this is it, because in Georgia today, a teacher had a gun, barricaded himself in his classroom, and fortunately, nobody was hurt, but was, you know, threatening, and they were able to apprehend him. Again, no students were harmed, but kind of blows your...
So how'd that arming teachers thing work out?
Now what's the next? If only there was a armed, you know, principal who could take out the armed teachers who now are shooting everybody. I mean, come on. It's just so... I mean, it was ridiculous before this, but this
it's
alone...
absurd levels.
...is just like, oh, come on. You know, look, it's...
Okay, I have a Dalton, Georgia story. That's where this was. Dalton, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
It's up near the North Georgia border.
Mm-hmm.
One time I was driving. I was leaving Atlanta. I had been down there and on this big trip, road trip, and I was heading back north. And it was at night, but I was trying to like make it to Chattanooga or Nashville or wherever I was going. But this terrible storm came in and it looked like it was just going to keep storming for hours. So I was like, you know what? I don't want to drive in this. It was really bad and really windy and some tornadoes. I was like, nope, I'm out. So I just stopped at like whatever motel was close by. And it was a Motel 6. And I you know, got in and got my room for the night and whatever. And I said, do you have Wi-Fi or do I need a coat? You know, whatever. And the guy said, oh, I'll put you in a room. It's closer to the office, so the Wi-Fi will reach. It doesn't reach the whole facility. I was like, okay, that's fine. He goes, I don't rent out this room a lot. And I was tired enough to not pay attention to that till later. I was like, I should have said, why don't you? What horrible curse has befallen it is what I should have said. Instead, I was like, thanks, here's my room key, here's my credit card, thanks, bye. And I went up there and I'm doing my work and the power on my laptop is going down.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, oh, I gotta plug it in. And I move the little nightstand to find a plug. And there is a very neatly laid out line of chicken bones laying behind the nightstand. And I was like, well, that's weird. And I can tell they're going behind, like, the bed area. And I was like, what in the hell? And I look, there's chicken bones all over this hotel room. Not like, but like chicken wing bones.
Yeah, little ones.
Right? Little drummies all around the room.
That's not something you see every day.
No. So I called back and I was like, hey, I don't think, you know, do you have another room? Because it appears that there are, and I like pausing to try to like say this tactfully. And the guy was like, don't say chicken bones. And I'm like, yeah, there are, yes, there are chicken bones in this room. How did, he goes, nah, we've had this problem. I'm like, what? And so I get another room and like, it's done. But when I'm down there getting the new key, I was like, how did you know? Like what? He goes, well, we've had a problem with some people like hiding chicken bones in this hotel before. And I'm like, so don't you check?
Why does somebody do that?
And also, who does that? And also why? Like somebody is running around Dalton, Georgia, like, I'm going to bring this Motel 6 down and I'm going to put chicken bones in all the rooms.
So there was no like, oh, I was expecting that there was like some like voodoo something going on here. But so he didn't know? He didn't know why?
No, he just knew that it was an ongoing problem that people were finding chicken bones in their room. And I was like, great. So he goes, but unfortunately, like the Wi-Fi is not going to be able to reach this other room. And I'm like, you know what? That's at this point, I'm just going to check for chicken bones and go to sleep.
That's
what I'm going to
do. Bizarre.
So bizarre. So when I saw Dalton, Georgia today pop up with that story about this teacher, I was like, oh,
maybe
that's the chicken bone guy.
Yeah, seriously. Wow. We should have seen the signs when he started sneaking into motels and leaving trails of chicken bones.
That's like an expensive practical joke.
It really is. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's Motel 6, but you still got to get the room.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know, but that's all I know about Dalton, Georgia.
That's interesting. You should. I don't know if their Chamber of Commerce advertises that or not. They should. It's intriguing.
It's probably like under new management now, and it's a beautiful Motel 6, and it's fine. And like one of our 9 listeners knows that guy, or maybe is that guy, that manager. And it's like, really?
Thanks a lot.
I worked really hard to fix this Motel 6 around.
The sign says, now with fewer chicken bones.
I think I have a picture somewhere that I could... I know I took a picture of, because I took a picture of the first one that I saw, because I didn't realize it was a line at first. I feel like I maybe tweeted it or something. This was a number of years ago.
Oh, my God. That's so bizarre. Holy cow.
I clearly recall, because it was a weird thing for me, because at the same time, I had been to New Orleans on this trip, and I was out walking kind of on the edge of the French Quarter, and there are these two guys sitting on a stoop, and I walked by them, and one of them started laughing in a very eerie kind of jackal kind of way, like a cackle. It was scary. And he had a little tin that when I walked by, I thought was maybe like a cigarette butt can. Mm. But he reached in and threw the contents at my feet. Mm. And there was a chicken, like a little chicken bone. There was a bunch of dried beans and a couple of coins and some flour. And I was like, I froze. And I was like, what did you just do? What curse did you just throw at me?
Bad person.
What just happened? And he was laughing. And I looked down and I was like, okay, I'm not going to touch any of this, but I'm going to remember it. And then I went into one of the stores. I was like, I think it's all fun, but like, what did this man throw at me? And I told the woman, and she goes, well, it's a full moon tonight, and that sounds like a love spell. He probably just wanted you to drop everything and marry him on the spot. But free will is a big deal, so you're good. And it didn't work. And I was like, oh, no. No way in the world was I going to suddenly fall in love with that little weird old man there. But it was the same trip.
At least he tried.
But yeah, it would have been a great How We Met story.
Right. When you said chicken bones, that was the first thing I thought. It was some kind of like, it sounds, you know, like a voodoo, mystical
maybe,
something or other. But
maybe. I have no idea.
Who knows what would have happened if you'd stayed in that room.
And then, I didn't, like, I was so done with the whole thing. And then I was like, well, what did he mean? I don't rent out that room a lot. What does that mean? So.
A lot of mysteries out there.
Yeah. That was a weird trip. That was a weird, weird trip. I drove from Chicago to Texas, to New Orleans, to Atlanta, and then back. Uh-huh. I had stuff to do in all those cities. I was like, screw it, I'm going to drive. And I did, because I like a good road trip. But like, weirdness befell me on that.
Seriously.
Because that's when, on that same trip, in my hotel in New Orleans, I just sort of grabbed like whatever hotel room is on sale. I'm trying to do this on a budget. And there... they charged extra for rooms with windows in them in this particular. It's a very beautiful hotel, though.
Yeah.
It's right off of, it's right in the French Quarter. But I was like, yeah, I don't need a window. I'm just going to be here to sleep. I've got work to do here. It's all good. And the next morning, I said to the front desk, because I was going to be there a few nights, I was like, can I maybe switch to a different room? It seems like there's a lot of kids on my floor. They were like playing and running all night. And she started to laugh. And she handed me this like brochure. And she said, well, this used to be a school and it burned in the 20s. And so a lot of, like, we're happy to move you, but a lot of people talk about children in the halls. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't move rooms because I'm like, okay, that's whatever. But there was just like a lot of weirdness on that trip.
Yeah, seriously. Wow. Interesting. Mystical trip.
Surprised I survived it.
Yeah, seriously.
And here we are.
Again, who knows what might have happened if you slept. Maybe you'd have like incredible chicken superpowers or something like that if you slept in that room.
See, maybe it was an enchantment. That would have been awesome. I would have been super awesome if I would have just stayed in that room and not bitch. Maybe it was like a feat of strength and I failed it by being like, I'm going to piece out of this room filled with chicken bones.
You chickened out.
Oh, stop it, Hopkey.
Yeah, I went there.
Yeah. So predictions for the week ahead. I know that's a thing that we try to do, and it gets harder and more absurd every time.
Yes, 'cause, I think more will happen with Kushner, Jared Kushner.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that.
Junior losing his top secret security clearance because tied up in God knows what. But yeah, I think, I mean, because they've now pulled his security clearance. He was an idiot to begin with. I mean, keep in mind, Jared Kushner is like an over-glorified realtor.
Absolutely.
Who was suddenly going to solve the Middle East conflict.
Right.
And was doing all this other. I mean, it was preposterous that he was in there in the first place. He's built like $1 billion in debt.
And yet he had very high security clearance.
Right. And he had high, and now there's reports that four different countries had tried to kind of manipulate him because they knew he was a soft target. And in the meantime, he spent a year having access to our most highly classified information.
Soft target is a real nice way of saying idiot.
Yes, exactly. And just soft. You know, he just looks soft. He's a doughy little fart. anyway.
I mean, I wouldn't say he has like a particularly commanding hairstyle.
Yeah, no. He's a drip. That's a good way to put it, I think.
He just like is such an, he seems like such an inconsequential person.
Yeah,
like if you ran into him socially, you would just be like, that guy's a nerd.
Yeah, exactly.
Get out of here, nerd.
Be gone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think he and Ivanka may be moving on possibly because it seems like Trump has kind of allowed John Kelly, the chief of staff, to make these decisions, and I don't see how Jared is going to be getting a lot done when he can't see all the secret stuff. And also, I think there's more Mueller stuff going on for sure, because obviously we've seen some stuff coming out lately, the indictments of the 13 different Russians, and then Gates flipping on Manafort, which I think is a huge deal.
Huge deal, yeah.
Because that guy knows everything about Paul Manafort, so now they're going to put the screws to Manafort big time. And if he flips,
I love that expression, put the screws to.
Yeah.
Like, that's so, like, film noir, private dick. Like, I'm going to put the screws to you, and you're going to talk, Buster.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Yeah, right. And so, yeah. So I think that, and just, Trump has been really agitated lately.
Oh, man, he's been so mad. That's what I was going to say, is he's going to up himself with how completely off the rails he's been. Because something else is up, because he's got a lot going on. He's real freaked out. He said that completely idiotic dipshittery about, even if I didn't have a weapon, I would have run in there. Are you serious? There's a great piece that takes him, like, owns him piece by piece of, like, let's look at other times he was super not heroic.
Oh, yeah, the Washington Post. I think it was the Washington Post.
Right? Yeah. That just took it thing by thing. And the criticism of that piece that some people offered was it was far too generous and far too gentlemanly. Like, you did not go for the jugular in a couple of instances where you could have. It was so funny. And it was like where he ducks off the podium and it's better if the cops take care of this guy. God, it was so funny and so good.
Stephen Colbert had his response to that was so funny, and I can't do it justice like this because a lot of it was in his expressions, but he said, he started out with, like, first of all, he's like, there's a lot of things we can take apart there. He said, first of all, the run part, I don't really believe. I don't think you can do that. But then he says, he's like, and also he's like, this man took 5 deferments from Vietnam. What is he going to do? Run in and stab them with his bone spurs?
Yeah,
it was so good. It was a great line.
Yeah.
It was really funny.
Yeah. I mean, nothing. There is no story that has ever surfaced about this guy that has said that was a heroic act.
Right. And not for nothing, too. I mean, if you're the kind of person who can do that, nobody who can actually do that says that, right?
That's the thing.
Like, if you're talking to a veteran who might actually have the combat skills to, and the just the general guts
right.
to do that, he or she's not going to be like, oh, yeah, I'd run in there, no problem, no weapon, whatever. I think I'd do that.
Right.
You know,
no, right.
they're just not going to say it. They would just do it.
Funny like, that you say that. I was talking to my dad about this, who I think is that guy that would do that, because he's got a little bit of, like, off the rails Charles Bronson in him. And I said, I didn't explicitly say, would you, but I said, can you even imagine, right? And he goes,
Yeah.
End response, change subject.
Yeah.
Just, that was it. Which told me, like, he would have totally tried to do that.
That's what that's how a badass responds. But the rest of us have no business saying anything like that.
Because, look, to do that, what he's referring to, he's saying, I would be willing to run into a facility where that I know is being shot up
with an
automatic assault rifle.
Right.
Like, you're probably going to die.
Yeah.
At the very least, you're probably going to get shot.
Yeah.
It may not be fatal, but you're probably going to get shot. So you have to reconcile some stuff with your own mortality and ego of, like, this is worth it.
Right.
I will run straight at this. Maybe I can, like, what is Trump going to do? Like,
yeah.
You're going to outrun a teenager and tackle him and beat him up? Is that your plan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
That's real good.
You're afraid of stairs, sir. Like, I don't think... I would run in there, but there were stairs. I couldn't do it.
He's, like, squeaked out by blood.
Yeah, right.
Like, a guy fell and was bleeding in front of him, and he was more concerned about the condition of these beautiful marble floors.
Yeah.
Like, get out of here with your, I'm going to run in there. That was so bizarre. He's so out of touch.
Well, and it's funny. You know, the thing about him and this whole presidency that is remarkable, and perhaps one day they'll do a study about this, because...
perhaps you and I will do that
perhaps, study. Perhaps, yes. Academic folks like us. but, like, the frequency with which he says things that he just doesn't need to say.
Right.
That would have made... I mean, if you filtered those out, he would possibly be, like, a very effective obviously very conservative, not effective from my standpoint, but very effective conservative leader.
I mean, effective is a strong word. Let's say passable.
Right.
Conservative leader.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, he just...
he just can't help himself.
Yeah, he just steps on his own dick all the time, basically. I mean, and it's...
you might be giving his weenus way too much credit for length.
But that's really,
I don't know, but I'm just guessing.
That's really what's happening, though. It's like, he's just constantly... It's like, you didn't need to say that.
Yeah.
But you did, and now you look like a...
No reason to say that.
Right, and everybody hates you and thinks you're a moron. So, I mean, you know, it just... And it just just keeps reinforcing it. Whereas if he would just shut
just
up...
Don't talk.
Right.
I do have questions about the security officer that did not run into the facility.
Yeah.
Like, something else is going on there.
Right. And also, well, did you read his own, like...
Yes.
Yeah. And I thought, well, maybe from the get-go on that, I thought it was very unfair that even the, not just Trump, but the sheriff down there kind of dragged that guy pretty hard. And I thought, okay, again, he technically trained for this sort of thing, but we don't know exactly what went on. I mean, this was all chaos and stuff. So maybe he chickened out.
Maybe.
And didn't. But at the same time, I don't think we know. And man, I mean, the guilt on that guy.
Oh.
For whether he was justified or not.
Right.
I mean, you know, so that's why I thought that was.
Right.
I found that extremely cruel. I guess that everybody was dragging him.
I think I just think there are pieces not out.
Yeah,
there's something else.
Yeah,
like I'm waiting for, why did he not run in there, or at least
why did he actually not run in there? Right.
Yeah, yeah, I'm waiting for that reason.
And we may not ever know. I mean,
absolutely,
you know.
It might be a completely valid reason. And as you said, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
I think that man will be racked with guilt forever.
Yeah, and his explanation, I thought, did not sound unreasonable. You know, he basically, it sounded like, and because again, you sort of put yourself in that situation where you're outside, he thought apparently that the gunfire was coming from an like adjacent outside behind like another building.
Right.
I mean, and this all, you look, I mean, consider how quickly this all unfolded too. I don't know. I mean,
fair enough. Yeah.
You know, I would like to think these guys are trained to evaluate and react really quickly and do it right, but I don't know. I mean, and it sounded like the officers that came behind him did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows?
It still feels like there's a piece missing, and I don't know what it is. But there's another shoe that maybe will not ever drop, but it might. I don't know.
I kind of. The other thing too was just the fact that because I didn't know if he would come out with a statement, and when he did, because if he just screwed up, I almost feel like that guy just sinks into alcoholism or what. I mean, just just goes over, like wilts basically.
Sure.
But the fact that he's standing up does make me almost wonder if. Okay, maybe there's more to this. Mm-hmm. That he,
see, that's what I think, too.
Because otherwise, why...
Why even say it?
Right,
so, I mean, I think, there? Like, imagine it's now become this very big story.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if I were that guy, I would move.
Oh, yeah.
You can't stay in that community.
No, of course not. Yeah.
You're going to be the subject of targeting. Like, you're going to... Yeah. Whether you were, no matter what, like, you're going to be that guy who didn't do that, and you're going to be racked with guilt. Like, no, move, start over, change name, do it, be done.
Yeah, it's sad, the whole thing. Yeah.
I know, and but it is interesting, like, the many arms that story has developed.
Yeah.
It's no longer just about the high school shooting. It is about young people. It is about online culture. It's about a lot of things right now that is really interesting. So, unfortunately, we are out of time. So everybody be cool to each other or just completely own each other on Twitter. I don't care. Do whatever you want.
Free for all this week.
Just go nuts. Whatever. This has been Guth and Hubcam Politics. We'll see you next time.